Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, more D23 Expo details, new Season of the Force experiences, Toontown might finally be complete.
PhotoPass excursion has moved, a famous Imagineer has resurfaced, and we talk to David, Dr. Skipper, Marley, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Howdy, partners! For your safety, remain seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast, and be sure to watch your ears. If any of you folks are wearing hats or glasses, best remove them, because Tag and Teresa have the wildest ride in the wilderness.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of March 27th, 2024. I'm Tag Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to thank everyone who supports the show. And this week, we would like to give a special shout out to new weekly tiers, Sarah C. and Marin L., as well as current weekly tiers, Jan Y., Charles W., and Sherry H. If you would like to help support the show to make sure we can keep bringing you the latest news and information, discussion, and interviews about Disneyland, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Now let's get to the news. Well, we talked pretty heavily last week about D23 ticketing and expo updates. Teresa and Lynn from the Sweet Spot actually had a Zoom call that they did for the public. But there's even more changes.
But wait, there's more. There's always more. So I feel like D23 Expo Weekend, or the Ultimate Disney Fan Event as it's being called this year because it's just so big and so awesome, is going to be a continuous topic probably until the weekend, because what D23 likes to do, as they do every year, is they don't just have one giant announcement releasing all of the details of this huge, huge fan weekend. They kind of release it over time. So what we have learned since we discussed this last week were several things. One thing, well, A, tickets went on sale today, starting with gold members. It was kind of a pre-sale. So a limited number of tickets were on sale today for gold members to try and snag. Spoiler alert, I was in the queue trying to snag our tickets for the D23 weekend, and unfortunately, it sold, the pre-sale sold out before it was our turn to enter to get in there. But have no fear, tomorrow or Wednesday, as you're listening to this, will be the pre-sale event for Disney Visa card holders. So if you are a Disney Visa card holder and you pay with your Disney Visa card, you get access to a limited number of pre-sale tickets tomorrow, as in Wednesday. And then if, again, you don't get what you want, because, again, they're only limited releases. So just because the 3-day ticket sold out today doesn't mean they're sold out, period, end of story. They're only little by little, they're releasing these. So yeah, so then try again on Thursday, which will be the final day when all tickets are on sale. So when it sold out on Thursday and beyond, then truly, yes, it is sold out. But the biggest thing that I realized that we talked about on the call was, when they first released the information, the only time they said anything about assigned seating was for those floor seats. They were talking about you get the same seat every night, when they were talking about the expensive seats on the floor, the ones that if you want to be like showered in confetti and that kind of stuff, those seats. But it has been released that every single seat in the Honda Center does have an assigned number to it. So if you're going to try and meet up and go with friends, you need to purchase your tickets together as a group. Because if you purchase your tickets separately, think of it like any like concert event or like a theater event or like a game.
Anywhere you pick a seat.
Yeah, anytime that you have to pick a seat, it's best to try and get them all at the same time so you make sure your seats are together. Otherwise, you run the risk of not being sat in the same spot. Before, it wasn't really clear, so I wasn't sure if, say, you wanted to do where Tag and I are looking to go, the nosebleeds, if it was just, oh, you had a ticket for that section and the section was first come, first serve. Nope, that's not how it is. Every ticket has a specific assigned seat, so be aware of that. The other big news that came out, too, is that there is a bag policy for the Honda Center. So if you've been to Expo before, you know that you accumulate a lot of things. Well, you cannot bring those things with you to the Honda Center. You're going to have to figure something out. There is not a bag check. And the size restrictions of the bag are small.
Tiny.
Backpacks are not allowed. Purses are not allowed. It's small. Like, think of like a sling clutch. Bag, clutch sized. Like, it's only 2 inches depth of this thing. Little bags. What it is for bags and purses can be no larger than 5 inches by 9 inches by 2 inches. So again, that's 5 by 9 by 2 inches. Now, if you do require a diaper bag or a purse or bag for medical items, there is a different restriction for that, and it's 12 by 12 by 12. So there are two different restrictions. Well, one that's going to be for, you know, the kind of blanket one is 5 by 9 by 2 inches. And then if there is diaper or medical needs, you are allowed a bigger bag, which is 12 by 12 by 12. You do not have to worry about it being a clear bag. They don't say anything about it needing to be clear, just the size is what is important here. So if you are a shopper at the D23 Expo, you need to make sure that you've got plenty of time to either go to your car to drop off your goods or go back to your hotel room and drop off your goods. You cannot take all of your goodies with you to the Honda Center. Those were like the big, big takeaways from the call.
I was really noticing like how ridiculous this, I mean, I get it, like, fine. But coming from the convention center where they give you a bunch of stuff, like, what are you supposed to do with your stuff?
It's tough. It's one of those things that was my first, like, my gut reaction to him. Like, do you know how much stuff I accumulate throughout the day at the expo? Because there's a lot, all sorts of giveaways and freebies, let alone the temptation of all the amazing things to buy. So I'm like, what am I supposed to do with all my stuff? But then I thought, I'm like, oh, you know what it is? When you go to Expo, we have to go through security when we go to the Expo, when we go to the convention center. And so when we enter, we have like nothing because we just have, you know, whatever our little essentials is. We pick up and we accumulate all the stuff within the security bubble.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We're leaving that security bubble. Of course, the Honda Center has their restrictions because like I said, you left the security bubble.
Well, and they probably want to get people in. This is going to be thousands of people in this thing. They want to get people in without having to take a bunch of time at security and all that. Plus, think about it. How much space do you have at your tiny little...
Where you put in your bags.
Yeah.
That's the other
thing,
too.
So I think that's another issue. So, like, I get it.
It makes sense, but it's kind of like,
I kind of wish that there would have been some type of system or lockers that Disney could have provided that you could pay, like, outside of the venue that you could, like, put your stuff in and then get it afterwards or something, because they're going to offer transportation from the convention center to the Honda Center, which is great, but, like, I feel like a lot of people are going to have to leave the convention center early to go to their cars or go back to their hotel rooms or whatever to put their crap down.
Or just be very, very conscious throughout the day.
Yeah.
How much...
What's our plan?
Our plan is
to get tickets, first of all.
A, get tickets, and then B, we'll figure out what kind of ticket it is we're able to secure, because maybe we don't even get a Honda Center ticket because they're all sold out by the time it's our turn in line. So maybe it's not an issue. I've got a couple of different things that I'm thinking that maybe, because one of the things that might be beneficial is if you're going with a group. So, right, it's Tag and I, and we're going to be meeting up with another podcasting friend and doing the Honda Center events together. Maybe it makes more sense to go to walk to the hotel, drop all of our stuff off, and then just take like an Uber or a Lyft or a ride share from our hotel to the Honda Center and just skip trying to figure out the free shuttle thing. That might be beneficial, or maybe it's going to be super expensive because everybody's trying to get
Now I have other questions. Like, is it how much is parking at the convention center? Because I'm like, maybe we just rent a car. And then we can throw our crap in, drive over to the Honda Center, and then, like, we don't have to deal with the transport.
I feel like that's going to be more expensive way to go. Yeah. Because our hotels, we're staying at the Howard Johnson again, because, you know, how much we love the Hojo. It is a little bit of a hike from the convention center to Hojo.
We wanted to stay closer this year, but everywhere was outrageously priced.
Which makes total sense. But so, so we might be doing something completely off, which I wanted to see how the shuttles and stuff work. Maybe we'll be really, really good, Tag, and somehow not accumulate too much stuff on
Have you
Expo
met
day.
Us?
Yes. Or perhaps maybe we have friends that parked there and we could use some space in their car, whatever. I think we've got options, but my quote unquote worst case scenario is we just stop by the hotel and just ride share from the hotel to the Honda Center.
Sure. So, actually, we could probably pick up a ride share at the convention center.
You could
take
it
to the hotel.
Yep.
You could. And then, what I mean is, like, stay with that person, because nowadays in the ride shares you can say like stops you want to make.
Oh,
so like you could go there, somebody could run in with our crap quick and go on. Anyway,
we've got options. There's lots of options. Well, new details have been released regarding Season of the Force this year, which of course is the expanded May the 4th Star Wars celebration at the parks. To add to the fun, a special, it's not really its own fireworks show, but a special thing will be happening with the fireworks, a mini show, if you will, titled Fire of the Rising Moons. This will be the debut year. So where you're going to experience this, of course, is back in Galaxy's Edge at the Black Spire Spaceport, or the TIE Echelon docking platform, and you can even watch it from the speeder garage. Music from John Williams will play as part of the show and experience.
So I read this at first, and you corrected me. I read this at first that this was going to be a different fireworks show, but you're saying from what you read that it is the same show that they normally have, but in Galaxy's Edge, it's going to have different music that goes along with, because it's going to be the Pixar Fest fireworks or whatever.
Yeah, so the main fireworks show will still be going off. And I mean, I don't know how many people know this or how many people have gone back and watched the fireworks from Galaxy's Edge.
I've been told it's cool.
But you can see the fireworks from Galaxy's Edge. Obviously, you're missing the projections and the music and all that. But the fireworks are going off kind of behind the mountain range, or whatever you want to call the spires there.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing is they're just kind of Star Wars-ifying it, because it's happening anyways. And so they're just making it more in theme, I guess, to make sense with the land.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be interesting trying to sync, like Disney always does, trying to sync Star Wars music to
a different show.
To a different show that has totally different music.
I'm curious
to
see what
this
looks like.
But they might do a really great job at it, and I will be totally surprised. By the way, I don't think we talked about this last week, but I really want to mention this. This Star Tours jacket that is going to be available at the Star Trader.
Is this on your list?
Does that not look cool?
They did one of these
before.
Does that
look cool?
It's kind of like,
It looks like a
jacket,
almost.
But it's a hoodie. So it's not like a nylon-y type jacket, you know, where it's not like a rain. What do you call that? I guess nylon would be the best thing.
Yeah,
this looks
it's not a
more.
Raincoat.
This looks more like maybe it's either like the soft shell material or an athletics type.
It looks like hoodie. It's just like a regular hoodie material.
See, I think it looks nicer than regular hoodie. Like, I don't think it just looks like a your typical hoodie. It looks cool though. I agree.
I just saw that and I was like,
they just released these, so you didn't miss it yet. They just were releasing some of the merchandise that will be on sale too.
I'm excited.
Stay tuned for Foodie Land.
It has been on my bucket list, if you will, or my Disney must do list to see fireworks from Galaxy's Edge. And we've never done it. So I'm hoping that while we're there and this is going on, we can go experience it.
100% we will. Because why? Because we were smart this time and have a longer trip. And we don't have any days that we aren't able to be in the parks, because every day we're there is available and we have reservations for, which is the first time in a long time, I feel. So I'm like so excited.
Well, Teresa, it's been a long time. A long time. It's been over a year. But it appears that the very last thing to be completed in Toontown is finally done. Donald's Duck Pond finally opened this week. The area features a small splash pad and a shower in the rear part of the area to rinse off when done playing. And I will tell you, every video that I have seen of this area, there is nobody using it. I also know that it's been raining and chillier there.
Yeah, it is a little chilly. This is my hot take with this area.
Okay.
It's underwhelming.
For how long it took, definitely.
I don't think it's operating at 100%. I think they got it operating enough to open, but I don't think it's fully imagined and fully doing what the plan was, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because it's just kind of got a couple little tiny fountains, and they don't even go off like a bunch. Mice Chat did share a video, and so my information is just from the video that was shared. We haven't seen this in person. So please, if you go and it's much more active and exciting when you're there, let us know. But it's just kind of a little like bloop, bloop, Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, there's like one little fountain thing going off at a time for little bursts. Hmm. It's not, I think it's supposed to be more. I think this is just like splash pad phase one or something. Does that make sense?
I know that I watched, of course, our friend over at David over at Fresh Baked had a construction video, and his whole thing, and I don't know, to be honest, but that shower wasn't really going to be part of it. That, like, the city or the county said, like, you need to have something like this, and that they had to wait. But the shower is just, like, it looks like a themed post with a shower, and it's kind of tucked behind the boat. So I'm interested because I'm trying to look back on when Toontown opened a year ago, because I vaguely remember that the Donald's Duck Pond area was not behind construction walls, but it wasn't working yet. So I was curious to see if Disney or whoever had any photos of this area, because, yeah, see, it wasn't blocked off when Disney took photos of it. But I was trying to figure out if that shower was there before, because it was just something that they had mentioned.
Which maybe that's what the delay was.
Yeah.
They had
but a year to get a shower installed?
I don't know. I guess I don't really fully understand the purpose of the shower, too. It's a splash pad. Why would you need to shower? Nobody's showering and rinsing off after a splash pad.
I don't know. That's
you're
going to
get more like wet in the shower than you would on the doing the splash pad.
In the concept art, which, like, I know flooded. Doesn't have anything, but there's nothing over there.
Yeah, I feel like it's not fully what it's supposed to be. I think there's still a couple of kinks that they got to work out of the plumbing.
Sure. But I was just curious because I thought when the land opened, like I said, I don't think there was walls around this section.
No.
I just think they weren't running the fountains.
Yeah.
And then it like
or it was
up.
Just like, you know, it was blocked off but not walled off, if that makes sense. Like there was like maybe a little thing saying, nope, don't cross this line. A little barrier, if you will, at the entrance so you couldn't walk into the splash side. But
sure, hold
well,
please.
We'll see. I'm curious to check this out in person because, like I said, the video that I've seen was a little underwhelming, especially with how long it took for them to get this open and running. So I just feel like this isn't the full story. There's more to come is what I feel on this one.
If anybody has any idea, if you've worked in Toontown or you were there for opening and you remember this or you have any information, please let us know. Feedback at dlweekly.net or go to dlweekly.net, click on the contact button to send us.
Well, the PhotoPass excursions we talked about previously have moved. PhotoPass excursions are now in Disney California Adventure near Ariel's Undersea Adventure. The photo spots include areas like Grizzly Flats, Pixar Pier, Paradise Garden Park, and San Francisco. And again, just a reminder, the PhotoPass excursions were kind of where you would have a mini photo shoot, we'll say, with a cast member. Or with a PhotoPass cast member. So that PhotoPass cast member would hang out with you and go to a couple of different spaces in certain areas. So you could say you pick Pixar Pier. You do a couple of spots at Pixar Pier to do a little mini photo.
It was like 15 minutes.
Yep. So instead of like just waiting in line and the PhotoPass photographer stationary at one spot, they'd kind of roam the area with you. So what do you think about this?
I think that the spots that are on their like little tour that they can go on is basically everywhere you'd kind of, except for Cars Land, is basically everywhere that you'd want to get photos because there's no Cars Land, there's no Avengers Campus.
San Francisco is fun.
But I feel, absolutely. But I feel that there are already PhotoPass photographers that have the best shots over there for those spaces.
Sure.
So I think these other areas, especially, I was actually surprised on the list
Avengers
that Paradise
Campus.
Gardens Park was on there because that is a really beautiful part of the park that like everybody kind of walks by because you don't really, unless you're getting food there, you don't normally walk back in that section. But it's a cool little section back there. I'd take photos back there. And I agree with you. I think San Francisco is going to be a fun place to take different photos because there's so many themed elements now that you could take photos with.
And like they built it with, I feel like they built it with photos in mind because there's a couple areas that are like photo walls and that sort of stuff. So I think this is a fun feature. It definitely is Disney just trying to test it out and see how it's going. Will it be free forever? Who knows? But currently, right now, it is included with your normal PhotoPass stuff. So if you have a magic key that includes PhotoPass, or if you purchase PhotoPass or Genie Plus for the day, it is included in that price now. There's not an additional cost as of now.
I don't know how you feel about this next story.
We'll talk about
weekly tiers who love bubbles will love this story.
And fidget toys.
A new interactive bubble blower is available in Toontown that features cranks and buttons that are functional. The blower makes noises and lights up in different colors. You can pick one up at the Engineer Souvenirs for $38.
Do you want to know what this reminded me of? And I'm sure they did this on purpose.
What does it remind you of?
The game. Do you remember the game Bop It?
I vaguely remember it, but I never played it.
It was a game that there was a button in the middle. Mm-hmm. There was a twisty thing and a pulley thing on either side of it. And the game would tell you what to do. It would tell you to bop it, twist it, pull it, whatever, whatever.
Okay.
And then it would keep going faster and faster. I don't know if this one talks you through, but it reminds me of that in the fact that it's this one thing that you can like fidget and do all these different little things with it. Plus, it's got the sound. But that's what it reminds. It gives me Bop It.
Yeah. I think it's great because this is, again, Disney trying to cater to all different types of people. There's people that need fidget things to
Do you want to know what's brilliant about this? Mm. Is if you are a parent of a child who loves the bubble wand and they run out of bubbles, they're still like, this is still something.
Sure.
It's still entertaining for them.
I didn't even think about that aspect.
Or
of it.
You can not put the bubbles in it. So you're not walking through a stream of bubbles as the parent the entire day, and they can still be fidgeting and play with this toy.
Yeah.
Multi-purpose.
I feel that I know that the bubble wands are very popular. I just wish sometimes that there wasn't, like, in certain areas, like when you're in a queue, I wish they weren't just blowing bubbles like at your face. Because some people, I mean, Tim Tracker, who I used to watch all the time, he has a fear of bubbles. So I think about that too. Like, what if there's somebody that has a fear of bubbles and your kids just, and then like you're freaking someone out. But at the same time, like kids can be kids and do stuff. But
I want to see what it's like in person. In my head, I imagine that it's like Bop It.
Sure. Are you pro or con for bubble wands?
I don't know if it talks you. So I'm wondering if it's like a game.
Sure.
And the little like reel that they did, that Disney showcased it on, that's really where the Bop It, because they were talking about all the different things. And I'm sure it was intentional to make it kind of sound like the Bop It, because that's a nostalgic toy for people in my age group. But yeah, I don't mind bubble wands. And honestly, it's probably, like, I think it's, I equate bubbles to Disney parks. Mm. So to me, it's just kind of, I just expect there to be bubbles.
Sure. Okay.
If that makes
sense.
That's fair. And I've just gotten good at dodging bubbles so I don't accidentally take a bubble to the eye, because that's not fun.
Or your mouth.
Or I've never had a bubble, never taken a bubble in the mouth either. So I've just been really lucky when it comes to bubbles. I feel like for me, it's a little extra like magic in the air, but I also understand how they like, I don't wear glasses. I think wearing glasses and having bubbles hit your glasses could be
frustrating.
So, I mean, I totally get it. So I'm all about the bubbles as long as we're being conscientious about the bubbles. If you're in open area and you're running around and just doing your bubble thing, you do your bubble thing. That's awesome. But yeah, if you're in like a tight, cramped place, or maybe you're inside, maybe let's not do bubbles.
If there's a grumpy tag glaring at your child, don't use it. No, it doesn't.
I've never seen you glare at a child I've never seen you glare at bubbles.
There has been times where I've been like, can we stop with all the bubble? Because those bubble wands are very good at what they do.
They do.
Like, they pump out thousands of bubbles a minute, it seems like. Anyway, we can move on. It's just one of those things that are
the
like,
bubbles.
Ooh. I will say that I don't mind the bubbles as much as I mind, and they don't really have them at Disneyland anymore, but they used to have those toys that light up and like spin.
Oh, yes.
And those sucked because parents wouldn't take them from the kids for the shows at night, like the fireworks. And so I'm trying to like watch these beautiful fireworks, and there's this flashy toy.
That's right. I forgot about those little spinny flashy toys.
I kind of miss when I was a child. I miss the, and I know they're not good for the environment and all that stuff, but I miss the glow sticks, because you used to get them and then you could put them around your neck or put them around your your wrist.
Oh, like Disney used to sell glow
Disney
sticks?
Used to, before the electrical parade, they would walk up and down with their big tube of glow sticks, and they'd come out and they'd crack them so they'd all light up.
Yep.
And some people would make Mickey ears out of them and all this stuff, some of the cast members. And then, of course, every kid wanted them. And this shows you how old I am. They were like $1 a thing. And
Dang, what a
so,
deal.
Yeah.
What a deal. Well, Blue Milk at Galaxy's Edge has been something that fans love and some fans don't. Well, coming soon, you can get some at your local grocery store. True Moo Blue Milk will be arriving soon at grocery stores around the U.S. The carton says blue-colored vanilla low-fat milk with other flavors, which is different than the Parks version, which is a dairy-free version.
What? I can't remember. What was your opinion of the Blue Milk?
I remember, because I think we tried... We're going to have to... Season of the Force, you and I are revisiting the milk situation.
I don't need to. I remember it vividly.
I don't remember it.
I remember it vividly. It's got that kind of... It's interesting because...
I remember having high hopes and then being let down. But I don't remember really the flavor.
Coats your mouth like you would kind of would expect like a whole milk to, you know, like kind of like whatever. Sure. But it's... silkier feeling, so it's weird because it's like a weird mouth feel for me, and then it's got like an off, like I don't know what I expected it to taste like, but it didn't taste like whatever my brain thought it was gonna taste like, and I didn't enjoy it. And the green I think is also not very great. For me, Galaxy's Edge, there's plenty of other things to drink there that I think are better than the milk. This sounds like it's gonna be actual milk, vanilla milk with blue coloring like and other flavors.
What you mean is like it's a dairy milk. So like cow, yep, a flavored cow milk.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, I like that the stuff at the park is plant-based because when they first were talking about having blue milk in Galaxy's Edge, all I could think about was like hot summer days and how unappetizing
milk would
be walking around the park with a glass of like dairy milk. Would be. For some reason in my brain, like the plant-based milks, because like you said, they're lighter.
Yeah.
Didn't seem as like, why would you do that? Like
nobody wants milk when it's 100 degrees outside.
You, and like if it's spilled and you know, I just it sounded like a not great idea. I need to revisit the milks because I think I only had a sip and that was my experience was a sip. So I really don't remember what they tasted like.
I had one drink and then I was like, nope. And then I had that one drink that was in Oga's that was like something similar to that.
Yeah, the band.
And the cast member like took it from me and gave me a different drink, which was nice.
That's right. I remember you getting it because it had the cookie, like the Bantha milk or something. I can't remember what
it was something like that.
But there was a cookie on top of it.
It wasn't very good.
I remember that.
One of the most iconic Imagineers has confirmed
soon to be a Disney legend.
Yes. Has confirmed they are working with Imagineering. Again, Joe Rohde is back on the Imagineering campus leading a series of masterclass work sessions for current Imagineers. Now, there is no word on if he has any involvement in any current or future projects, but he shared on his social media that he was walking up to the door, and Disney Imagineering themselves said that he is there for these workshops.
I love this. I love this so much. I don't know 100%, but I think this is the first time that Joe Rohde has been back since he retired and left the company.
In 2020.
I love this. I love this so much because to me, the biggest thing with Imagineering is, yes, of course, the magic, but is passing down the knowledge. Think of the first wave of Imagineers that then mentored and taught the second. Like, I think that's really, really, really important, and that's the heart of Imagineering, is this kind of passing of the torch and passing down the knowledge. And I just love that even though Joe Rohde is not technically with the company, he's not employed with the company, he's obviously contracting with them in some sort, but I love that he's going and kind of helping current Imagineers kind of cultivate the Imagineering spirit that, I mean, you can almost like, it's cool because it's, you could almost, for some Imagineers who like learn from this person, who learn from that person, who learn from that person, you could trace current Imagineers all the way back to Walt, which is incredible. Absolutely incredible. So I love this. Maybe they have been doing this all along and it's just now kind of becoming more public knowledge that former Imagineers have been teaching these master classes. That could be completely possible, but this is the first time that we've seen it kind of publicly talked about, and I think it's brilliant. I love it.
I think this just goes to reinforce the idea of what Bob Iger is trying to do, which is he's trying to get the creatives back involved.
Well, yes,
that doesn't just mean in the movies and TV shows, but it also means in Imagineering and creating experiences at the parks. So I'm glad that this seems like that this is coming around. I'm also very happy that Joe Rohde decided to come back and do this because, you know, we don't really know what happened when he retired. It seemed like it was he didn't. I don't know. There's all types of speculation why he might have left or retired or left or whatever. But it's nice that whatever happened, he felt like he could come back and do this. And mm-hmm. and the company is still maintaining that relationship with him. So I am really excited to see if he's not working on future projects. I'm excited to see what the people that he is giving this class to are going to come up with in future yeah. projects.
Oh, I'm sure there was a ton of speculation because we had Joe Rohde coming back to Imagineering after we've heard them talk multiple times about an Avatar experience, possible land coming to Disneyland. I'm sure there was, yeah, they have probably all sorts of rumors flying since Joe Rohde did help create Pandora, the world of Avatar. You know, so I'm sure there was a lot of people that are like, ooh, you know.
But also Animal Kingdom, like that was his baby.
Yeah, incredible.
You know, we think of our Imagineers that have been big deals. You know, we have Tony Baxter, who of course did things like Big Thunder Mountain and Indiana Jones and
what Star are you Tours. Telling me? They what are I'm, all big deals.
They are. But what I'm saying is like, so Tony Baxter oversaw Disneyland Paris, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Joe Rohde oversaw Animal Kingdom, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, I'm excited that some of these people who have done entire parks are around doing stuff.
I agree.
I'm very excited for this next story. I know you might be surprised, or maybe you're not surprised, but I'm excited about this one.
I am surprised, because I thought when I put this in, you were going to be like,
No, there's a very specific thing I'm very excited about, but go ahead.
Okay, we'll get there. Well, we have more information on the characters that appeared in the concept art for Tiana's Bayou Adventure. I do think it's fun that, like, there's the theming runs deep on this new attraction, but the quote-unquote the critters, as they are called, and this is like the little band that's in the concept art kind of playing off to the side, and they've got like these cute little instruments, and we'll of course have the link shared in our show notes. But the critters, as they're called, consist of Bahila the beaver, Gritty the rabbit, Bo the opossum, Apollo the raccoon, Rufus the turtle, and Tim Leone the otter. Bo, Apollo, and Rufus will also be huggable plush available soon. So not only do these characters have names, there's backstories, and you can take some of them home with you as cute little furry plush. Okay, now go on. What is your excitement on the cute little characters?
I don't know how obsessed you know I am with raccoons.
Yes.
Apollo the raccoon, and he's being made into a plush. Let me just tell you about Apollo. Apollo loves transforming abandoned objects into works of musical art, like his squeeze box. He's full of the energy and storytelling, especially about the objects he finds in the bayou. He's particularly close with Rufus and appreciates Rufus's calm demeanor. I also want to mention, I don't know for a fact, but I feel like Rufus is a nod to the Country Bear Jamboree that was in Critter Country.
It very well could be.
Do you have a favorite?
You're
like all of them. The otter's pretty cute, too.
The fiddle playing otter. Timoleone?
Timoleone?
Timoleone. Yeah, maybe that's probably it. Timoleone. He's so cute. He's like this little old otter, and he's got this big old white mustache, and he's just playing his little fiddle. But the other thing, too. If you didn't immediately get distracted by the adorable critters and their little backstories, is the critter musicians are playing a rendition of one of our favorite songs. I mean, they're all kind of our favorite songs from the movie The Princess and the Frog. Remember, the attraction is set after the film.
Yep.
So I wasn't sure that this song was going to be in the attraction, and I love this song. It's Gonna Take You There, which is the Zydeco film that Ray sings. Gonna take you down, gonna take you all the way down.
Oh, sure.
That song. So they're doing a rendition of that song.
And I'm just going to tell you about these animals real quick. Bihalia, the beaver, doesn't just build dams. She helps build musical instruments using natural materials from the bayou. As a strong-willed percussionist, it's safe to say she is the heartbeat of the band, as well as a natural designer and engineer. Gritty the Rabbit is always willing to dig a little deeper to help others. Gritty plays the washboard, a found automobile license plate with a high energy flare. It's the perfect instrument for someone who's often overzealous and digs to relieve her nerves. Bo the opossum, seeing limitless possibilities. No one finds more wonder in the bayou and the sounds of Zydeco music than Bo. All she knows is beauty, especially her own. You can find her plucking out the low notes with her upright gourd bass, which, of course, involves some musical dexterity with her tail. Why don't you read the turtle one? I know how much of a fan of turtles you are.
Oh, yes. So Rufus the turtle, which I just love his name. Rufus the turtle, he, yes, may be a turtle, but he is quick to jump into rhythm with his harmonica. He's also the first to join in on new adventures. Genuine and sincere, but he may come across a little sarcastic sometime with his habitual sighing. But Rufus does love to go on adventures with Apollo. And then we've got Timoleon. He is the eldest of the band. He's the otter, but his fiddle playing is inspired by all the quote unquote kids he spends his time around while in the bayou. When he's not sawing out a jig, he's famous for telling stories of days long ago about his explorations of every corner of the bayou.
This is great that they've come up with all these characters.
The song that I always assumed was called Going Down the Bayou that Ray sings is not called Going Down the Bayou. It is called
Gonna Take You There.
Gonna Take You There. It's such a fun, bouncing, like, upbeat.
I feel like I need to watch this movie again.
I'm so excited that this song is gonna come in there. Because, spoiler alert, Ray would not be part. Ray, the one who, the firefly that sings the song, is not going to be part of the attraction because the attraction takes place after the film. I'm not going to say why, because I don't want to spoil
what's
the film.
What's his girlfriend or wife's name?
Evangeline.
He's with Evangeline.
There you go. Yes, because Ray is with Evangeline. That's why he can't be in the attraction. So I didn't think that this song, all of the songs from the movie, honestly, I love them. I wish like Friends on the Other Side was going to be in this, but again,
you know, there might be new music that you end up loving.
I know. But that character also is not going to be... Well, maybe he will. He's the Shadow Man. He's sneaky. But from what we learned at the end of the film, I don't believe that he'll be a part of the attraction.
Yeah.
We haven't had a for sure on that or not. But I'm excited to see that there's going to be music from the film in here as well.
Well, if you enjoy listening to the show, please consider rating and reviewing the show on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and, of course, part of the community.
I up, down, touch the ground, I think of things to chew, like honey and milk and chocolate. With a hefty, happy appetite, I'm a hefty, happy poo. A rumbly in my tumbly means it's time for snacks.
Well, y'all know what time it is. It's time for Snack Chat. Well, May is coming faster than we all realize, which can only mean one thing. Of course, May the 4th. With that comes the Season of the Force foodie guide. So, Tag, you said that you had gone through and picked out some favorites.
I picked out two things. So, one is a DocuBase 7, which is... I've learned, I actually really like the food at DocuBase 7.
Yes.
For those of you who may not have any idea where this is, because it is kind of hidden in a weird way, if you are on the top of the stairs looking at the Millennium Falcon, if you turn to your left, it's the building right there. That's DocuBase 7.
There you go.
So available April 5th through June 2nd, and mobile orders available. You can get the fried chicken bows, which are two crispy chicken bows with spicy katsu sauce and creamy slaw.
We're trying these.
Yeah, these look amazing.
They look so good.
The other thing I picked was at Galactic Grill of all places, available April 5th through June 2nd, also with mobile order available. This one is not new, but looks good. It is the Wookiee Parfait, which is a chocolate sponge cake, chocolate pudding, and caramel mousse on a chocolate coffee crust with chocolate pearls.
You and I have the same list. Those were both on my list as well.
Do you have
any
more, or do I have both your options?
I am also curious. At Katsuka's Kettle in Galaxy's Edge is the Salto Slush, which is a plant-based pandan-flavored horchata topped with cold brew.
I saw top with cold brew, and I was like, Teresa's going to pick this.
Yep, that was the cincher for me, was that top with cold brew. And then the other cool thing is over at Oga's, there's new drinks coming to Oga's to celebrate the Season of the Force. There's the Fiery Mustafarian, a Silver Sea Martini, Chandrillon Chalice, and then also a Chandrillon Orb Glass.
Is that the Chandrillon Orb Glass here, or is that this? Both of these look amazing.
No, I think those are both the Chandrillon beverages
that they also have pictured there. I have to mention that everybody's favorite Wookiee Cookie is also coming back at the Grand Californian.
Yeah, we tried that last year. Some people are obsessed with it, though.
I know,
but I had different... I thought it was going to be like a... like an oatmeal cream pie.
Oh, sure.
So I thought it was going to be different. Another thing we need to mention, the popcorn buckets that they unveiled. There are two new popcorn buckets coming, and I don't know what it is. He's a disgusting, yucky character, and he gives me the ick feel whenever I see him on screen, but this popcorn bucket.
And you want to be eating popcorn out of his mouth?
This popcorn bucket is so good. Jabba the Hutt as a popcorn bucket. So good. The popcorn bucket you didn't know you needed.
I have the opposite feeling of you.
Really?
I think from the video that I saw of them promoting this, I thought like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm going to go really hard on this one. I thought it looked cheap.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't think the like quality on it was very good. And I didn't like the idea that you were eating it out of his mouth, basically. And then honestly, the other popcorn bucket, which is a salvaged stormtrooper helmet bucket, I get the idea and I think it could be kind of cool, but I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't know. I feel like they've done so good with popcorn buckets that like my threshold is really high.
Sure.
That Millennium Falcon one also looks cool.
I was going to say, no fear, because the Grogu sipper is returning. The Millennium Falcon popcorn bucket is also returning. And there's a Death Star glow cube and a Millennium Falcon glow cube as well. They did not mention this, but I spied with my little eye a straw clip.
With Salacious Crumb.
Straw clips are not my thing, but I don't know what it is about.
You want a little Salacious Crumb?
He's so
when you're drinking your cold brew, he's going, Yes.
I don't know what it is about him, but I might need
By the way,
I might need a Salacious
Crumb. I don't feel like I've seen this beer flight since Galaxy's Edge opened.
The Rancor beer flight souvenir board. Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been...
Because we went back and forth when we were there with somebody about maybe buying it.
Probably
but then,
Vern.
Yeah. But
he likes beer.
But it was hard to transport. It was large.
Well, and the hard thing, too, is you couldn't do the beer flight without also then being the owner of the board with the four teeth that the flight came in.
But that's what I'm saying is the teeth looked cool.
Yeah, the teeth looked cool. But yeah, I wish that there was the option to just have the flight or have the flight and take home the vessel. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I also want to say that for Star Wars night, there's some stuff. And I just want to point out that one of the things down here looked really good. And for me, it was the pineapple and ube crescent sundae at the Tropical Hideaway. This looks really good.
That it does. But yeah, link will be in the show notes to check out the rest of the foodie guide. They only kind of tease the Star Wars night food. So I do feel like there's probably going to be a separate, maybe not full foodie guide, but there will be a separate list of all the delicious eats that will be available only during Star Wars nights.
Well, you have heard us talk about our great experiences staying at the Howard Johnson Anaheim, and we plan on staying with them again this summer when we go visit the parks. Well, we have partnered with them to offer our listeners some cool discounts. If you're going at all to experience Season of the Force, if you're going to try some of the yummy stuff we were just talking about, D23, basically anything. So much is going on. Even booking as far out as whenever they announced the opening of Tiana's Bayou Adventures, so you can see the critters we just talked about. You can get 15% off your stay, and if you're a Magic Key holder, you can get 20% off. To take advantage of these discounts, go to dealweekly.net. There'll be a Howard Johnson logo there. Click on that and then use the promo codes that are listed on the website to get the discount that you qualify for. I tell you, it is totally worth it. I love staying here. For D23, Teresa and I were actually looking at other hotels closer, because we had talked about that from last year, because it is kind of a trek from Hojo to the convention center. Mm-hmm. But Hojo actually ended up being one of the better priced options still available. So you can even get some discounts on top of that if you're going around that time. So there you go.
Your attention, please. DL Weekly Trivia is now leaving for a Grand Circle tour of the Magic Kingdom. With stops at New Orleans Square, Mickey's Toontown, and Tomorrowland. All weekly tiers for...
Hello, welcome to Trivia Land. Hello, hello, how are you two doing today?
I mean, you said we're not going to do very good, so I don't know.
I'm wondering if we got to get, if I need another full sheet of paper.
How many pieces of paper do we need for tonight,
James?
We've
had so many lists recently.
No lists today.
Ooh. So we don't have to list, like, every attraction in alphabetical order, or what else did we have?
All the characters in Small World.
Oh, yeah, characters in Small World.
Nope, I have...
Lots of good ones.
Just four questions.
Okay.
Each have one answer.
Good.
So you just have to come up with the answer.
Hey, that's going to be a problem.
That might be the hard part.
That is the hard part of Trivia Land, but that's the part that we love. So maybe you'll surprise ourselves, and maybe, who knows? One way to find out, right? So First questioner this week comes from listener Michael R., and the question is, what was the shortest attraction of the opening day attractions?
The shortest attraction? Like, shortest, what do you mean? Like, ride length?
Yep.
Ooh.
Opening day attraction, shortest attraction. Ooh.
Is it the carousel?
That's what I keep coming back to as well. Was it Dumbo? Could have been Dumbo, too. Dumbo would be really short. But Dumbo wasn't an opening day attraction.
Their opening
sure,
day.
Sure.
Like the day one of park opening, it was not there yet.
What else was there? Carousel.
You had some
Mark Twain,
Dark Rides,
Jungle Cruise.
I don't remember all of the things that were in Tomorrowland, Jungle Cruise.
I think those were all longer. Yeah, I'm going to say Carousel. Carousel could be really short. Teacups, were they open yet? No.
Oh, no.
And the castle walkthrough wasn't a thing, so you can't count
no,
that.
No, teacups were there, but they moved them.
Sure. Okay. Well, I guess carousel.
What are you thinking, Teresa?
Also carousel.
Okie dokie.
Main Street vehicles would be another one. Autopia. But I
those are all longer.
I feel like the ones I can think of, I think carousel.
Yeah.
Storybook Land, it was not called that. It was called something else. I don't
Canal
remember
Canal Boats
what.
Of the World.
Yep. Canal mm-hmm. Boats of the Mud and Weeds.
Yeah.
That we named fancy things.
Yep. Put that Latin to good use, right?
Yes.
All right. Question two is from listener Andy M. And the question is, in the Pirates of the Caribbean Pieces of Eight gift shop, what is in the chandelier and why is it important?
Dang. See, I was just all excited because I'm like, there's something that I recently noticed, a detail there that like I should have known forever, so I was hoping it was this. No, not that.
Can I ask a clarifying question, Teresa, James?
Sure.
Andy M, is that Andy Mack?
It is.
The voice of Disneyland Now does all of our nice transitions. Shout out to Andy. Not shout out because of this question.
No, not shout out. This is a tough question, Andy.
What is in the chandelier?
Andy has sent in some doozies. So,
what is in the chandelier and why is it influential? In Pieces of Eight. What do you mean by influential?
Like it helped inspire something, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Is there, I'm going to say there's like gold pieces.
Gold pieces?
Yeah. And it helped inspire the name, Pieces of Eight.
I mean, that's smart. My thought was Captain Jack's compass was stuck up there.
Oh. I was thinking like a pirate hook for some reason was up there. Or like a pirate hat or something.
Yeah, I'm going to say Captain Jack Sparrow's compass is stuck up there.
Compass, okay.
It's a lot of potential detail, right? Of what is it? What is it doing?
God, now I got to pay attention. I was, again, so proud of myself for noticing.
What did you notice before?
The checkout. This is so brilliant. The checkout counter is a piano.
We'll have to look this up later. No. Just not right now.
Look it up later. I'm going to just put Pieces of Eight in here so we don't forget.
Okay.
All right. My third question for you is, what's the name of the motor court?
Is this your question?
My question.
Okay.
Motor
that serves as the boarding station for Radiator Springs Racers.
Oh, boy.
What? I don't understand the question.
I wasn't sure if it's like the motel or something, but the locale where you board your vehicle has a name.
The only thing I remember name-wise back there is like it's called like Stanley's Oasis.
Hmm. You probably have it. I'm thinking it's like the... I think it's something to do with the Cadillac, like, pointy light, like, caves. Because, like, when you come in the end, there's all the, like, lights. Yeah. But I don't know what I would call that. It's like the...
Cadillac cave? That sounds like a thing.
Well, there's Cadillac range.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm just going to describe it. I'm not going to get it because of the name.
Yeah.
But it's the lights. Like, the taillight caverns, I guess. That's what I'm going to say.
Taillight caverns. Got it.
I don't think that's right, but I think the idea might be right, but not the name.
Maybe, but I got one more question before we get there. And since you seemed so upset last time that I didn't really give you a Lost in the Park or cast member costume.
Oh, Lord.
Here's a cast member costume question for you.
Okay. We got to pay attention, Teresa. This is where we always have problems.
These cast members wear a large red jacket with a large blue stripe going down the sleeve and the side of the jacket. The stripe also has some yellow trim on it, and there's a few other small yellow lines on the jacket as well. There's also a left breast pocket. Otherwise, plain blue slacks or plain blue shorts, and that's really it.
Large red jacket.
How big is the jacket? Is it like a trench coat?
No. Like, I would say typical winter coat, but it definitely feels a little, like, oversized.
And it's got a blue stripe?
Blue stripe. And the latest I could verify this 100% for sure was back in 2012, but I don't think it's really been updated since.
And it's got blue slacks or shorts?
Yep.
Can you give us a hint in which park it's in?
No.
Okay.
Okay, the colors are giving me Pixar. But that doesn't track with his 2012
no
thought process. Because, right? Yellow, blue, red.
Where's the yellow?
They're like small, almost like they look like rope kind of going along the blue parts. And then there's also a few other lines that go, I think.
He said blue shorts or pants.
Yeah. With a red jacket.
Red jacket.
Or coat.
Blue
with
stripe.
The blue stripe with like a yellow rope, which makes me think like nautical for some reason.
Yeah, like don't overread into rope being the word. That's just how it feel like it looks. So.
Yeah. Mm. James.
You gotta think this too, jacket year round. Because a lot of the jackets are only like wintertime things. So I don't think this is an outdoor attraction.
Is there nothing under the jacket?
In my research, I did not find any of the cast members without the jacket on.
But you can't see that there's anything under the jacket. Like, the jacket's, like, zipped up or whatever, that's it.
Yes.
Or buttoned up or whatever.
Man. It is zipped up, yes.
Okay.
A zippered jacket. So then it's not, like, a fancy place. Like, it's not...
I'm just going to take a shot, and I'm probably wrong, and I'm going to say Autopia. That's what Teresa writes down. Autopia. You didn't even write down my little light thing.
No, I couldn't remember what the heck you called that cave. I'm like stumped on this one.
Caverns.
Okay, red jacket. And we're like red, like true red color, or red like a burgundy?
True red.
True red. Not Autopia. I think Autopias are like
wait,
whites
wait,
and silvers.
Wait. True red. Wait. Go back. He wouldn't tell us what park it was in.
Right.
Does that mean it might not be in the park? It might be like at the Disneyland Hotel.
What Disneyland Hotel dating back to 2012 would have those colors as their uniform? You could say Pixar Place now, but.
Well, plus shorts. Shorts would be weird inside like of a building or whatever.
Jacket
I think Autopia
year-round.
Maybe. Autopia, maybe. What?
Is it? I think it's Radiator Springs Racers.
I mean, that could make sense.
Damn it.
You know, that would be annoying because if we look at this.
No, they don't. They have Stanley's red. Oasis they have red shorts, so it's not there. I have nothing.
Plus, I feel like they'd have checkered something because isn't it like a racer out? Anyway.
We'll
find out in a minute.
They have red jackets. I got that much.
No, Tag, you won't find it out in a minute. You'll find out after this week's discussion topic.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are speaking with David, Dr. Skipper Marley, who is a Jungle Cruise skipper and the author of Skipper Stories. Welcome, Dr. Skipper, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Well, we'll start like we always do. Tell us your Disney story. This could be what got you interested in Disney or Disneyland. It could be as detailed as you like, and it should include how you started working for Disney or your love for Disneyland started, anything like that.
Okay. Let's see how short I can make this because I can go for hours. I was born in Orange County, so really close to the park. The only time I've ever lived where I couldn't hear Disney's fireworks were the 5 years I lived in Washington, D.C., so like as a kid, we knew when it was 7:30 because the fireworks. So we had to come in when the fireworks went off. That was like all the moms knew fireworks, time to go in. But when I was 8, my sister, who had just turned 16 and got her driver's license, took me to Disneyland for the day. It was just the two of us. And I don't remember anything from that day except one moment. I was waiting in line at the Jungle Cruise and we were the next to get on a boat. Like the boat drove away. We were the next one. And the skipper was just talking to me. And I just remember he was getting me to crack, you know, laughing and cracking jokes. And I remember thinking, when I grow up, I'm going to be a skipper. This is going to be my job. And I made it a life goal at the age of 8. So in the mid 90s, I was going to go to grad school. I was going to go back east to Washington, D.C. So I left my one job that paid well. And I decided I'm going to be a skipper. So I got hired on at Disney and I was obnoxious until they trained me at Jungle Cruise. I feel bad because one manager finally goes, fine, let's go get you trained, because I wasn't going to leave him alone. Walked into the training center and the guy goes, everything's booked. Jungle Cruise is booked for the summer. And he's scrolling through, look, for months, every weekend is booked. And so he scrolls back to the week ahead. He's like, well, just get rid of that guy. And he just points to some name, put Dave in. And so I watched him just delete this poor guy's name and typed my name in.
Sorry if that guy's listening.
I wish I could remember the name because he was this close to finding I was going to be a skipper. And I took it. So I worked there for like 6 months and then I moved back east. And then when I came back to California, my first job was back in Disney Entertainment for the opening of California Adventure. So I worked for a few months in entertainment. That was a blast. And then I went back to the Jungle Cruise for another like 3.5 years and just had the time of my life. And now it's taken over my life completely. Completely.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. So when you are entering Disneyland as on the first day as a guest, which way do you like to go? I feel like we probably already know the answer, but do you like to head forward to Fantasyland, right to Tomorrowland? Or are you taking a left and getting that pull right into Adventureland?
Side of the train tunnel do you go in?
Yep.
Train tunnel, I try to mix it up. I don't like to go through the same one every time. Although the last couple times I've gone through the right side. I think most people go to the left by City Hall. But
we're with you. We go to the right.
Yep.
But I try to mix it up. I'll tell you the answer about where I turn with this story. So I had annual passes when my girls were young. Mm-hmm. And when my wife comes home with our daughter, she'd taken him to the park while I was teaching. And she walks in and put her hands on her hips and she goes, do you know what your daughters do at Disneyland? And I'm like, oh God, this should be good. She goes, we got to the end of Main Street. They turned left and went to Adventureland. And I'm like, no, girls, let's go to Space Mountain. And they're like, no, Jungle Cruise first, Jungle Cruise first.
That's awesome.
They didn't know you could go to Disneyland and not go to Jungle Cruise first. I'm brainwashing those girls good.
It made an impression on you at 8. So yeah, it's going to be a thing forever.
Yep. Pretty much.
Well, I'm going to change this question maybe a little bit because I'm pretty sure I know what your favorite attraction is. Other than the Jungle Cruise,
what's your
second favorite attraction? Even though we're a Disneyland podcast, you can choose any attraction from any Disney park.
Oh, I can?
Yes.
Okay. I would say, like, if I could go on any of them that I've been on, it would be Expedition Everest at Animal Kingdom. Ooh. That is such a fun roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I just love that one so much. But at Disneyland, I got to say Pirates of the Caribbean.
Solid choice.
If I don't go on Pirates, I feel like I haven't even been to Disneyland. Like, that's the one I have to go on.
It was weird when they had it closed for refurbishment when we were there.
There was a couple summers or a couple springs ago.
Yeah, we went and I'm like, this is so weird. It's mm-hmm. closed and we don't even have the opportunity to go.
Yeah. Have you been to the Pirates of the Caribbean in Florida? That one's weird.
Yes.
Yeah, it's short.
The queue is cool. I do like how you kind of like walk through, you know, themed areas for the queue. But the ride itself or the attraction itself.
All out of order to me anyway, and it's just different. So,
it's the same thing with Paris. So the one in Paris has some really cool stuff to it. The coolest part of the Paris Pirates, in my opinion, is you kind of go up right away to the second floor because you don't really go down. And you go through the, like, I don't really remember all the order of everything. But anyway, you get past this one thing. And when you come down the splash, when you are kind of like, you know, coming off the splash, you're in the pirate battle scene.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
So it's like you like show up and like pirates are battling. Pretty cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah,
that's different.
Yeah. I like that.
And then, of course, you got Shanghai Disneyland, which is like totally different and crazy.
Yeah,
that looks amazing. Yeah,
and Tokyo Disney Sea
was an Imagineer was working on that, and he worked at Shanghai for a few years, and he was telling me how everything was just amazing. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It looks incredible.
Yeah,
that's what I love about all the parks is how different things are. Like we were just saying, it's Pirates of the Caribbean, but it's not the same experience each place you go. So I love when they do that. Same thing with, well, since we're going to talk about it here, Jungle Cruise.
Yeah,
what I've seen of what the Jungle Cruise attraction is on not Florida, that's similar, well, different but similar enough to ours, but some of the ones overseas are wildly different.
The one in Tokyo Disneyland is actually the same model. I'm trying to say the same scope. It's the same map as they used in Florida, but they spun it around and they go clockwise, where Jungle Cruise in Florida, we go counterclockwise.
Oh.
They go the other direction and it's flipped upside down. So it's the exact same track. All the animals are in kind of the same spots, just at a different way.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Which Jungle Cruise is it? Maybe it's not even Jungle Cruise now that I'm saying this. Has like fire. There's like an eruption or something.
Like Shanghai.
Yeah.
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
At the very end, there's this big explosion. And yeah, I wrote a book on the history of the Jungle Cruise, and a second edition of it is coming out in a couple months.
Oh. And
I wrote a chapter on Hong Kong that was very small. And then I got to talk to a guy named Tom Morris, who was one of the head Imagineers for that park. Yeah. And he fleshed out all of my questions. Why do they do this dumb thing? And then he would explain it to me. I'm like, oh, well, that's actually clever. And so he was quite helpful in explaining a lot of stuff to me. So
You'll have to let us know when that book comes out, and we'll be happy to promote it on our socials, because I'll tell you, we have the best audience. I guarantee you're going to get a few sales of your book after you're on the show here, because our people they have quite the extensive libraries of Disney books for sure. So
awesome.
Well, let's jump into it. Let's kind of backtrack to where it all began. Your time as a skipper, when you apparently booted someone else out and got right into skipper training. So can you tell us about your time in the jungle at Disneyland?
As I said, it was my dream. It's one of those things where, you know, you get a real big dream or a wish and you're like, it can't be as cool as I think it is. And it was, I hate to say this, but it was actually cooler than I thought it was going to be.
Wow.
It was just, everything was just, and because I had to go through training in 96. And then when I came back in 2000 or 2001, but it was just, training is like 3 days long, and they really would get you into it. So you were familiar with the script and the jokes and your timing. And it was neat that they really gave you a sense of how to do the job, and like a pride, like, we don't get paid extra for doing this. Like, anybody that pushes a button in Fantasyland is making the same amount of money we are. We're kind of cocky and arrogant because we know we do a much bigger show than they do. And so we kind of walk around like we're the cool kids. Yeah.
this reminds me of, we've recently rediscovered maybe the canoes.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like there's like a little competition between the canoes and the Jungle Cruise for who can be funniest and stuff like that. I know that they've kind of fired some shots at the Jungle Cruise when we've ridden it.
Yeah, because they wish they were funny. I learned this in working on my doing the Skipper Stories books, and then working on the history book, that the competition between the skippers and the canoe guys was really big in the 60s and 70s, like really big. And they said the deal was that the canoe guys were all of the jocks, and like they would get there in the morning and do push-ups to show how cool they were. Like, it was a competition who could get more girls, the funny, weird guys at Jungle, or the macho guys. But I found this ad that they had put up. this was like in the early 70s. They put up, this before Disneyland had gay days, but they made a sign. It said Gay Appreciation Day at Disneyland. Show up at the Davy Crockett, you know, dock dressed as your favorite canoe guy. Put it all backstage to imply that all the guys were gay, and they were very upset. They go, yeah, manager showed up and we got yelled at. And they're like, you scared this stuff off. So yeah, those, but I, when I was there, there were a bunch of skippers that, worked at canoe. I wanted to work at canoes really badly. Cause I liked being outside.
Yeah. Fun. I was going to say, it looked like I could see how, like, if they could, I know they're not close enough and that it's not the same pool, but you could very easily have skippers be Davy Crockett canoe guides as well. Yeah. Cause it's very, very similar as far as the guest entertainment part.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like, yeah, exactly. It's in the case of the canoes, it's two cast members having to encourage people to row around the river.
Right. Yeah.
So they got to give them something. And it's the same thing with the Jungle Cruise. You know, I find that, you know, the Jungle Cruise by itself, just the attraction, not the cast members, is fine. Like, it's a fine attraction. But really, the make or break is the cast member you have. And we've both had amazing cast members. And we've had some not so amazing skippers at times.
You just made my heart very warm. That's the thesis of all of my Jungle Cruise books, is that it's the skippers that make that attraction magical, not all the animatronics. Yeah.
100%. Could you imagine? I mean, you probably have done this, but I couldn't imagine going through the Jungle Cruise without a skipper.
No.
I would feel a little awkward, I think. Yeah. Just be like.
You know what would be really funny, but the skippers probably would get in trouble for this. I think it'd be hilarious to go on, like if I was a skipper one time, maybe I would go and just try to play the straight man and just be like, and now we're entering and over here is the African bull elephant.
Like it's a true, like, yeah, true documentary type thing.
Cause nobody expects that.
That's true.
The closest I ever got to that, I did a version. I didn't do it a bunch of times. I did it a few times. Was called the Pun Killer Tour because I don't like puns. Normally I think puns are more like showing off how clever you think you are. But, there was this guy, we were having lunch at the Disneyland restaurant for cast members. And he said he was dating this hearing impaired guy. And he said, you know, the jokes don't work in sign language. Cause you know, the line, oh, those gorillas are trying to get that Jeep to start. Looks like they got it to turn over. He goes, those gorillas were trying to get that Jeep to start. And now it's upside down. And I laughed so hard. And I went through every pun and I wrote it out literally. And so I worked on it and I had because back then you wouldn't get in trouble. Guys, I got a new script. You got it. So six of my friends sat in the back of the boat and they filled it with like 40 guests. And I go in the Indian elephant bathing pool. I'm like, feel free to take a picture. They're all dressed appropriately. And silence, but six guys in the back laughing hysterically. And it was that way the whole trip. I would do this like straight, you know, line. Nobody would laugh, then six guys, and so that my guests would look at me and then they'd look back at the guys in the back, like they're like, is he doing jokes we don't get? Like, is there like a secret message? But it was a lot of fun, but guests did not know what the hell was going on.
So what was the famous backside of water then?
I think I would just say, here's the other side of the water.
And here's the front side and this side.
Yeah.
Territory. It's a dangerous place to be going, and just little things like that. And for some reason, we just thought that that was the funniest thing ever. So
I could see how, yeah, if you had a bunch of like true Jungle Cruise fans versus guests that have maybe never done it before.
Yeah. You know who would love it? Vern.
Yes, Vern and James.
Teresa's husband loves the Jungle Cruise. James likes the Jungle Cruise too, but like Vern loves the Jungle Cruise. And he's the guy, huh?
Vern's a good man, I can tell.
He's the guy that when they say it's the wonderful, it's the backside of water, he starts chanting O2H, O2H.
Nice.
Even if he's the only one in the boat, he's still chanting.
Yeah. When I worked there, I was convinced I would write a better joke than that, because skippers, it's the only joke we all had to do or the boats would get angry. And I thought, I'm going to write something better. And I tried for 3.5 years, never got close. Never. The night time I would do Fantasmic and I would flash the lights on and off. song, and I do Mickey's voice, and so I could do a nighttime show. But during the day, I tried so many jokes, and all of them are just hot garbage.
So that's a great question, actually. As a skipper,
yeah,
did you prefer day or night, or did you have a preference?
Night. And I can tell you that I've interviewed at this point, I think about 150, 160 Jungle Cruise skippers. Every single one of them prefers working the night. The only guy, I met one guy who worked in the 70s who preferred day. And I'm like, and I stop. I'm like, I can't believe someone likes working the day better. He's like, he goes, I was a young man. I had, you know, girls to go out with. I didn't want to waste my nights in the jungle.
He just wanted to be off work is what it was.
Then. Yeah. He goes, at the night, it is better, but I had to be, I did not want to work at night because I wanted to go to the girls. Like, all right. But you admit that, but the nighttime. So when I tell people who are going to the park, go once during the day and once at night, they're two completely different rides.
So if what is it for skippers that makes the nighttime that much more fun to skip?
Couple things. One, it's not so crowded, so you can drive your boat slower.
Okay.
Instead of doing like an 8-minute trip, which I never did. Mine were always closer to 10. You could make it like a 12-minute trip. And you could slow down. You could do different jokes because you don't, not dirty jokes, but you don't have kids on the boat. So you don't have to do like kid-friendly jokes. You could just do more like sarcastic, fun jokes.
Sure, yeah.
And at night, things look different and kind of look spookier. So you could do stuff with that. So you had a lot more options and you had more time to do stuff. And that's when all of the best pranks happen is at night. You have the time. If they're only running three, like during the day, there's 8 boats and everybody's going fast. At night, you got 3. So you got time to screw around and cause trouble. So we would do like Jungle Police or Dead Skipper, or there's all these different pranks you could do. And now that'll get you in trouble. Management. Yeah. I had a skipper bring a copy of my book to a manager going, look, this has been happening since the 50s. Cause they were writing people up for this one prank. And threatening them, and they're like, we don't care. It's like for 50, 60 years, skippers have been doing this.
Yeah.
So I need to ask, so what are the pranks you just like describe what those, the police, dead skipper, like what is it? What are these?
One dead skipper, actually, I found out started in the 50s. Wow. All you do is you take your boat and you park it behind the backside of water and you just pretend to be like slumped over the rail dead. So when the boat comes to the front side of Schweitzer Falls, they see you. And like if you bring some of your friends, you all lay there like you've been murdered, like by the natives. And so skippers will stop and try to tie, Dave, are you okay? Are you okay? And you just lay there like you're dead.
But in the boat.
You drive back to the dock. Yeah. So that was Dead Skipper. Everybody does Dead Skipper. Jungle Police was a bit more involved. You would wait. It usually didn't tell the skipper it was going to happen. They drive off into the jungle and you get in the last boat at the dock and you drive backwards to like where the attacking natives are. And when they enter the hippo pool at one end, you come backing in from the other and you're flashing your lights. And we used to have those little gels like in theater, like they have red and blue. We would stick them over. We'd go, wee, 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 and we would back up. And so the skipper would stop and we're like, pull this boat over. Your skipper's not funny. And so the boats would touch and then skippers would hop off the police boat onto their boat, arrest the skipper, drag to the other boat, and then it would drive away. And then we're like, here's your new skipper who will finish the boat for you.
Can I just say that if that happened, that would be like the best Jungle Cruise trip ever.
It was always a lot of fun to do, especially there was one skipper I remember who just kept backing up because he didn't want it to happen. And we're like, dude, come on. Like yeah. Chasing you by the rhino now. It just looks weird. Usually skippers. I mean, the best thing was, is when they got back to the dock, the guests would see their skipper tied to a pole by the exit with all the ropes around him.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
That's the kind of stuff you would do at night when the managers weren't around. If the lead was okay with it, you would do it. But Jungle Police was always a lot of fun.
You were adding to the show.
Yeah.
Right? We were having fun. There were some managers and some leads there who were like, you know, as long as you're not hurting anybody, causing any damage, you know, doing anything potentially dangerous, go have fun. Because it kept our morale up because that job was actually pretty hard. You were tired after an 8-hour shift. Because you would do between 20 and 30 boats a day.
Wow. Yeah.
So you'd get bored with it for a while. You get tired after a while. So you needed to create some chaos.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine that. Yeah. I just think about, you know, I teach, right? And I lecture a little bit. And after doing that just twice a day, I feel very tired at the end of the day. So I can't imagine having to like spiel and be enthusiastic and like put on a show. Like, ugh.
Yeah, I was lecturing in a class today, and I would think, yeah, the jungle, you couldn't be like low energy. At least me always had to be high energy. So every boat, you had to like, unless they didn't care or didn't speak English, then you could just kind of take it off, take that trip off. But normally it was really high energy because that way the boat would get into it.
Yeah.
Makes which sense. Is what you want as the skipper. You want them to be involved and listening and having fun.
So yeah. Do you have any favorite jokes, either ones that are on script or ones that maybe you made up that you really enjoy, like really loved throwing in there?
I can tell you, I followed the, well, I didn't follow the script very quickly. I got rid of the script because I had a goal of every day I had to kind of keep my brain going. Mm-hmm. I had a goal that every day I had to write one new joke, and it couldn't be an improv joke. It had to be a joke that I could use again and again and again.
Wow. Yeah.
It was like my, cause I'm a writer. So I had to come up with something every day. But a lot of what I did was improvisational. And back in that day, you would ride other people's boats and hear their jokes and see what they were doing. And we would all kind of help each other. So I'd been there about 2.5 years or so, and I got hired to be one of the joke writers when they updated the script. Me and about 6 other skippers got to work with an imaginator and a manager. Yeah, it was really cool. And when we started the process, they said, okay, we want each one of you to drive a boat, and we're going to listen to your spiel, and you can't get in trouble no matter what you say. We want you to do your regular spiel. So I'm like, okay. So I did mine. And at the end, the head manager, a guy named Jerry, great guy, goes, the only joke you did on the script is backside of water. And I'm like, yeah, this script sucks. I don't have anything on it. So everything was either mine or stuff I borrowed from friends. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get some jokes that I wrote on there, but I was able to get jokes that I still don't know who wrote them. They just were there for years.
Wow.
I got those to be on the script. So it's one of my favorite jokes. I got to be on the script. I wish I had written it. I had not. And in working on my Jungle Cruise history book, I was convinced I was going to find out who wrote it. Never did.
Wow.
So
that's kind of cool. It's like the Phantom Skipper's joke or something.
Yeah. What was the joke? Did I miss it?
I didn't say what it was. There's jokes like if you wrote a joke that you liked, you could share it with everybody, or you could say, this is my joke. Don't do it. Say those two jokes. May I?
Yes,
of course.
Here's the joke that was my joke that I wouldn't let anybody do. So you're coming towards Schweitzer Falls, right? Like straight on. And you have to turn to the right to go to the Nile. I'm like, everybody, come on, lean to the right, lean to the right. It's okay. It's Orange County. You can lean to the right in Orange County. Because it's a political. And so that joke usually worked pretty well. If most of them were locals.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it was locals on the boat, that would have been perfect.
Then they would get, Although I had Billy Idol on my boat, 80s legend Billy Idol, and it was him, just him and his family and some friends. There was like maybe 8 or 9 people in this boat
with their
plaid there. And I do that joke and Billy Idol's right next to me. And I do the joke and I'm like, I bet he doesn't even know what that means because he's from England. And I look at him and he's leaning. I swear to God, he's leaning forward into the group. He has him like lean in. He's like, see, Orange County's like Margaret Thatcher, like the Tories, and they're all conservative. And I'm getting my degree in history and I'm listening going, Billy Idol, you're crushing it. That is an A-plus answer. And then out of the corner of my eye, I see one of the elephants go by. I'm like, oh crap, I got a job. Like, Billy Idol knows his stuff. The joke that I did not write that I love, whenever I see it done on the jungle, it makes me super happy, is at the rhino scene where it's chasing the guys up the pole. If you're familiar with this scene, I'll just tell you the story. So we're in this meeting back in the back building of Disneyland, the office building, and we're pitching jokes. And I said, I have a joke for the rhino. And they're like, okay, what is it for that scene? And I said, wow, look at those rocks. Man, that is a lot of rocks. And they were just quiet and they went, so next, and they just ignored me like, nope. And I got a little mad. I'm like, okay, lunch is coming up. During lunch, I'm going to go put on a Jungle Cruise costume. We're going on the ride. I'm doing that joke and it will be on the script. I guarantee it. And they're like, fine. So we went to lunch and I got changed. We all went like the Imagineer and the manager and all these skippers piled in the boat full of guests. And the reason why the joke works is every other scene at the Jungle Cruise, if there's dirt, it's usually just dirt or sand or plants. But where the rhino is, there's a ton of little, like, hand-sized rocks everywhere. It's all just rocks. So as you pull up, because the skipper can see the scene before the guests, right? So as you're pulling around the rocks for where the lions are, you see it. You stare, you're staring down at the rocks and you're ignoring this huge loud scene that's up above you. You're trying to get them to lay, look like down at the shore. Look at those rocks. It's going to be a million rocks on that beach. And you ignore this big thing. So we come around the corner. I do that joke. The boat roars with laughter. And I see the Imagineer with her clipboard. She looks at me and gives me the thumbs up sign. And I'm like, I told you. And then when we got there, she's like, you know, you're encouraging people to ignore a $500,000 piece of animatronics. And I said, I don't care. That joke's funny. We do not know who wrote that joke. One guy claimed he'd written it, but he claimed he wrote it like in 2006. Like I worked there in 96. And we were, you know, the joke is at least that old. So it's
right.
It's been there for a while.
I've definitely heard that joke.
I've heard that joke too.
I haven't heard it since they updated that scene because I think they're trying to make sure they're really on
the story. It's probably $1 million animatronic at this point.
They're really on the storyline script, but I bet you it comes back because it still works.
I have heard it since they updated it.
Have.
Yeah. Because it always gets me to laugh and cheer, and the skipper will look at me like, "What? Why do you like that?"
That's because I put it in the script.
Yeah,
and sometimes that's awesome.
Like you know, when you're going by the indie queue and there's a sign that says "danger," you know, like, "Oh, you're approaching danger." Look, there's the sign, and you would point to it. I'm the one that added in. You can tell it's true because it's in capital letters. When the skipper does that, I'm like, oh, "That's mine. I wrote those words." Yes.
That just reminds me because one of the versions of that is they said something like, all right, everybody, look out for danger. There it is, or whatever. They point to it. And I was like, that's so clever because, like, everybody always talks about the stuff that's on the other side of the thing, but they're talking about that. And I also like the one that I think I've had this same skipper a couple times, and she goes, yeah, famed Indiana Jones, he's looking for like some crazy treasure or something, but I don't know why he's looking over there, I'm right here. I yeah. love that one too.
That's an awesome one. That was actually my favorite spot in the jungle, was across from the Indiana Jones queue. I would stop there and just make fun of guests. Because that's where I could do my improv. I would just point at guests and make fun of them and crack jokes, and they couldn't hear you. And so you could say wild things, and the boat would laugh. And that's why they put up, in 2004, they put up that wall of plants between Jungle Cruise and Indiana Jones. They literally, I had it confirmed from a Disney source, they literally put that wall of plants there to stop skippers from doing that. Because so many guests would get mad and march down to City Hall and complain.
Oh.
Like you'd see somebody like with a jersey on with a number. You're like, hey, look, that one's been tagged and numbered and released back into the wild, or just it's all kinds of stuff. And it was so much fun. But I guess too many people got mad. Sometimes they couldn't even hear what they were, what was said. They pointed at me and laughed and I felt mad.
Oh, yeah. So, you're like, but it was a really good joke and it really wasn't making fun of you.
They're just like, you can't do that. So it's the only place at any Disney park where a kind of wall has been put up to protect guests from cast members. And I'm very proud of that. I'm proud to have been a part of that. Like, we got to put up a wall because these guys are out of control.
That is true, because the rest of the walls are to, like, protect the magic so the guests don't see behind the scenes.
That was specifically designed to stop skippers from making fun of guests and getting them angry.
Oh, too funny.
Yeah.
I think I've also heard a joke about, like, people will point to the queue or the exit or whatever that's right there, and they'll say, like, there's the most dangerous animal in the jungle, man.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I had a moment where I took a joke too far. It was right there.
Oh.
Because you could tell, the worst thing about working a jungle, was when it rained. That was bad. But when Indy would break down, everybody floods out of Indiana Jones, and they come to the Jungle Cruise. They don't care about you or your jokes. They just want to sit down and complain that Indy's down. So whenever Indy went down, we pulled out more boats. We got the line ready because we knew we were going to get hit with a crush. So it had been down about an hour and it was the summer. So it was hot and the guests weren't laughing, and you drive by and they would just look. And so I got a little grumpy because it had been like four or five boats in a row of people that didn't want to laugh or joke. They were just mad. So I come up right by where Indiana Jones is, and I do a joke. So it's blah, 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 punchline, you laugh. And so I go, blah, 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 punchline. And right when I do the punchline, they open the line back up at Indy. And so everybody starts going in. So I go, blah, 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 punchline. And the whole boat looks off and goes, oh. 45 people just, so I just stick the boat into neutral and let it coast to a stop. I said, wow, look at that line. That line's getting longer and longer and longer. And you're just sitting here on a boat watching that line, man. By the time you get off this boat, that's going to be a good 45 minute wait. And look how close you are. Oh, you're so close. I made fun of them until a boat came around the corner out of the rainforest and I had to go, but I was just tearing into them like that, just making fun of them. And then I hit the throttle and I do another joke and I don't hear any laughter. I do another joke. I don't hear any laughter. And I turn around and it was like 45 people who would each murder me if they could.
Oh no. So, like, we're just going to keep going.
Oh my God. So I sped up a little fast and I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. I was having fun at your expense and you did not, not appreciate it.
Did anybody complain?
No, nobody did. They were too busy running over to Jungle Cruise.
they're trying to get their spot in the Indy queue.
They were not thrilled. I thought it was hysterical. But you know.
Well, and what were the odds of you doing that, like, punchline, and it actually, like, happened to time it out just right?
The timing was
that it comes right back.
It was stunning because I watched all their heads go, oh, like they all swiveled. And I just decided, all right, you're going to ruin my trip. All right, let's have some fun at your expense, which is not.
Well, and you're stuck here whether you want to be or not.
It's true.
You're not hopping off the boat and hopping the little fence there.
Yep. Not happening for you.
You know what, though? Like, you said that, and I could see myself doing something like that. Like, you just get fed up, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to. It's not just their fault, but they also were not laughing. So guess what? You're going to understand how I feel in this moment.
Right? Yeah.
So along with jokes, I mean, I feel like the jungle is pretty infamous for pranks. You talked about a couple already. What are some of the other pranks that used to happen? Because you're right. We've heard that the pranks have kind of been.
I feel like everywhere at Disneyland, they've really cracked down on people having fun.
That's part of it. Although what I've noticed is it goes in waves. Where they let you have a lot of fun, and then the new managers show up that crack down on everything. And I had a meeting with a Disney executive a couple of years ago, right before COVID hit. I got to go up to the Disney studios and everything, and I hadn't worked at the park in like 10 years, but they were just grilling me about the Jungle Cruise and what do I think about this and what do I think about that. And it was like a big meeting, and I'm like, I got a job as a professor. I'll just say whatever the hell I want. And so I said my opinion, and the one executive goes, that's what I think. And so I just kept like, oh, all right. So I just kept going. And this other lady goes, that's what our research shows. And it's like what they want up in Glendale and what the skippers want is the same thing, but the managers in the middle only concerned about guest complaints and keeping their job. Sure. And so they would rather have Jungle be boring then do something that will get them in trouble. And so I said, until you deal with that management problem in the middle, Jungle's always going to struggle. So yeah, my favorite pranks. Oh, but anyway, so they're in a situation right now where any prank you do is just, they will fire you or suspend you for even little. A buddy I know got suspended for 3 days for doing Dead Skipper, the guy that broke my. I said, this has been since the 50s.
Yeah.
So little stuff like that, they will just.
That's not, you know, I could see like if it's a safety concern or something like that, but that doesn't sound like a safety or, like you said, it wasn't going to hurt anything, you know,
of the things that you described, like the police one, I can see is like, you know, if you're going between two boats or something, that could be a safety. Somebody could slip and get hurt or whatever. Like, I can get that. But like, you're just parking your boat and pretending to be passed out or dead or whatever. Like, that's not going to do anything.
The problem is, hope this isn't going too much into the weeds, but there was a safety division at Disney who wants to make everything about safety. And so management kind of used them to make pranks safety violations. So going on safari, going out in the jungle on your own is a safety violation and you're fired if you do it. Where I used to eat lunch out there almost a couple times a week. I would go through the jungle and take pictures and go do pranks. Where now, if you go out there without authorization, you are immediately fired because it's like, how is it? I'm walking around plants. Mm-hmm. Like, how is this dangerous? But managers didn't like you doing it, so they found a way to make it a safety thing so they could fire you. So it's that's but all right, my favorite pranks were the one that got me the best was, remember those little pink notepads that were like messages, like while you're out, like call this person.
Oh, yes, yes.
So I get to Jungle one day, and there in the little Jungle Cruise office was the notepad with my name on it, and it said call Mike, and it had this 4-digit extension. So I grabbed the phone and I dial up, who's Mike? And I'm waiting, and he goes, Michael Eisner's office. And I hang up the phone. My heart stopped pounding. I took the sheet off. I looked to see who was coming into work next. I wrote his name down. I'm like, call Mike immediately. And I put the number there and waited for him to do it. And literally about 2 weeks later, you could no longer call the studio from the park. They disconnected it.
You got to wonder how many calls it was then.
I just feel bad for like the administrative assistant or whatever who was answering and like Michael Eisner's office and then click. What is going on?
We used to be able to call Florida as well.
Oh, wow.
And so I don't know why we do this. People like City Hall would call and say, oh, what is your wait time? And we would tell them, oh, 20 minutes, 20, whatever.
Yeah.
And so one time we decided it would be funny just to transfer them to Florida. So I go, hey, what's your wait time? I'm like, hold on. And I would just transfer them to Jungle Cruise in Florida. And so one day I was the lead. I was like running the ride. And a manager comes around the corner. He's like, hey, Dave, how's it going? I'm like, good. How are you? He's like, so what is your wait time? I'm like, 15 minutes. He goes, why does it say 45 minutes out on the board? Now, I don't know. I don't know. And he just looked at me and didn't say anything and walked away. We finally got caught because they said, do you want to know our fast pass time? Mm. You don't have fast pass. And they're like, this is Florida. So after a while, you couldn't call Florida anymore. They disconnected our ability to do that.
They're like, nowadays you can't call anywhere outside of the park, period.
So we're pretty sure we're the reason why that happened, because we found a bit and just abused it to death.
That would have been funny. Hilarious. And then the poor people who are in Florida are like, what?
Why are we getting, calls about our wait time? And those are my favorite. Can I tell you one more phone one?
Of course.
We only did this late at night when the park was slower, but we would call Autopia and say, you couldn't tell who was calling you. So we would call Autopia and say, hey, this is Bill. It's City Hall. I have guests doing a scavenger hunt. Let me know how many red cars you're running and call me back in 10 minutes. And one time a guy goes, well, we're really busy. I don't have the time. Hey, have a rookie do it. 10 minutes. How many red cars? Don't make me wait. And it click and you hang up. And we thought it was funny. And one of our skippers, she was dating a guy who worked in City Hall. By one night after work, he's like, so are you guys calling Autopia telling them it's a scavenger hunt? And we all laughed and went, no. Because it worked. I don't know if it was that night or earlier. It's like a guy called and said, okay, we're running 25 red cars. And I went, okay. Why do we care? He goes, none of us at City Hall knew why we would randomly get calls from Autopia telling how many different colored cars we were running.
That's funny. It'd be great if it was like the same day. Oh, there's 25 red cars and like 30 minutes later. Okay, and 15 blue cars.
He came by a couple times with guest complaints. It's like, hey, this guest didn't like this joke, but he had the form. And he would show it to us. Okay, he goes, just so you know. And he would just tear it up and throw it in the trash. He goes, it's a funny joke. I don't know why they got mad. It's not going on anybody's record. Like, yay!
That is amazing. I want to go back and ask you a question, because I don't think we've talked to anybody about this before who's worked on the Jungle Cruise. So you were talking about going on safari and eating lunch and stuff.
Yeah.
What was that like? And where would you go to eat lunch? Could you see what's going on? I just have so many questions.
Yeah, I'll tell you everything. Because I went on safari so frequently, I think maybe more than any other skipper, because I loved it, because I'm very hyper. I like the noise and the action, but I also need to have like a mental downtime where I can just kind of recharge. So my lunch was like 45 minutes. My favorite spot was to go on top of Schweitzer Falls.
You can go up there.
Yeah. You go up the back. It's real easy. And you would sit up there, and there was the big, like, there's a big pond where the water pours over the side, and you could see boats coming towards you in the other way. And it was real quiet. And you would just sit there and eat your lunch, and guests never, they looked up, they could see you, but no one ever did. Mm-hmm. And you could just sit there and eat your lunch and watch the boats go by in like the early evening or at night. It was super quiet. And like in the summer, it'd be nice and like cool a little bit with the breeze. And there were days where I thought, there are 80,000 people packed into this park, and I am probably the only person that is just alone in a vast space, Disneyland. Mm-hmm. So I would soak it up. Other fun places we would go, like by the lions, like the veldt scene.
Oh.
And then the gorilla camp was fun. The gorilla camp was a little more difficult to get to. You had to go through the, like the cave where the elephants, like where Bertha's taking a shower.
Oh.
There's a cave network through there you had to get through to go out there. But that was a fun spot. I just liked being out there where it was quiet and you could relax. And then I found out in the 60s and 70s, late at night, skippers would take out usually a newer guy, and you would go out to one of the islands. Hey, hop on that island and pick that thing up for me. You'll see it. And they would hop off the boat, and then they would just drive away and leave them in the dark.
That's messed up.
15, 20 minutes later to pick them up. Yeah. Yeah. So, cause it could be scary all alone, and suddenly you're on this island and it's gone. And we used to do this thing called the Manhattan Run, cause the front island is called Manhattan, and they would drop you off in the Cambodian shrine scene by the tiger. You would hop there, and you had to make it from there to where Trader Sam was before that skipper got around. And normally it was at night. He would just floor it and go. And the rule was, if you weren't there, you were stuck on the island. You run in, and there was no path or any. Now they made a path. There was no path. So you're just running through bushes and trying to hop over like sprinklers and stuff and running into huge spider webs. And it was so stupid and so fun at the same time.
Do you have any guest stories that are particularly interesting or funny, or like guests just doing dumb things? I mean, other than making your life difficult.
Just, yeah. How much, what do you have time for? Favorite one. I wasn't there, but a friend of mine, they were in the hippo pool. This guy stands up and says, "I'll save you." And he leaps into the and swims through the hippo pool, climbs out and disappears into the jungle. And so we have like a mic, and we also have a radio contact. So he contacts, "Hey, you know, there's somebody running around." He gets back to the dock, and the guy's mom was on the boat. And so they get back to the dock, and sitting across the exit from the Jungle Cruise is a guy sitting there on a bench, just soaking wet, just sitting there waiting for his mom. So security are like, "Hey, why don't you come talk with us for a while?" Yeah,
I think we know who it was. I think we found him.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's not that deep, is it?
The hippo pool is actually pretty deep.
Is it? Okay.
Big hippos.
How did someone...
Yeah, they have to go all the way down so you can't see them. So there it can be between 8 and 10 feet deep.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty deep there.
I was just thinking, like, as a skipper,
yeah,
like somebody doing this, it's like, what, like, oh, what, I mean, what can you do? Like, he jumped out. Like, I'm not going to jump in after him or whatever. I mean, I guess the only thing I would have done is, you know, fired off the gun, like an emergency or something and stayed there, I guess, to just kind of keep trying to keep an eye on him or something. But what the heck?
He watched him run up and disappear. And so he's like, "All right, he's in the jungle somewhere."
Yeah.
But he made it back to the dock before the boat did.
You know, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say that. That's pretty amazing. I would have gotten lost and stuck back there if I had to try and figure out how to get from the backside of the hippo pool. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because you've never been back there. So how did he?
Yeah, it's easier than you think, because there's a hill around the hippo pool, but once you get over it, that's the back of Main Street, and like we're I interviewed skippers from the early 60s, late 50s and early 60s, when Walt would stay there over the weekend. They said sometimes one guy said it just fantastic, is at night you'd go through the hippo pool and you would look, because there's a spot where you can stand, and you would see a little cigarette glow, and it was Walt standing in the jungle watching you. Watch the boats go by, and he would go smoke where guests couldn't see him.
Yeah.
And he goes, "You'd go out there pitch black, and you would just see like the kind of light as he took a drag, and you'd be like, oh my God, Walt Disney is watching me do this joke."
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
The fact that they could continue the joke after seeing that he was there.
Yeah.
Guests do all kinds of, I mean, almost anything you can imagine. There was a guest that fell from the second story of the boat.
No.
And he was trying to get his sunglasses fell off. And he was trying to reach them. And I got this story from 7 different skippers who were all there that day. And they were trying to go like, sir, we'll get it for it, you know, because they can reach it. We'll get it. He's like, no. And the boat just left. So there's no boat at the dock. Falls over and the awning is canvas. So he hits it. It shoots him in the air and then boom, right into the water. Where if the boat had been there, he would have hit
everyone else.
And one guy says in all his years at jungle, he never saw anybody hit the water and get out that fast. He hopped out. He said he walked on the dock and just tried to walk away like nothing had happened.
He was probably so embarrassed.
But no, I'm fine. And they had to like physically stop him.
Yeah.
We got to check you out. And they got him a towel and some new clothes. And the best part was his family went on the ride without him.
I mean.
They're like, we don't know that guy.
Yeah, we don't know that guy.
Yeah. So it was you would see and hear guests just say and do all kinds of crazy.
I didn't realize. I mean, the 2 stories you gave us were guests ending up in the water. I didn't realize that many guests ended up in the water. One intentionally was in the water.
Yeah. Every once in a while, like a little kid would get between the boat and the dock and fall through. And they have safety measures for that now, which is better. But the only people I ever saw go in were skippers. And
intentionally or unintentionally?
Against his will. There was this rope. It was a big tree from when it was Aladdin's Oasis, this huge real tree, and had this big thick rope that dragged in the water. And you would take it and you would swing out in front of a boat.
Ooh.
And Tarzan yell, and you would swing back. But the trick was, because it was dragging in the water, you could only swing out and then swing back, and you had to hop off. There was not enough energy for you to do it a second time. So I go and do it, and we're each taking turns. This one guy does it, and he decides to stay on and try it again. He goes, whoa, and he just stopped. Guys, help me. And there was like a pole, like to pick up trash. We could have helped him, but we wouldn't. We just sat there, and a manager just looks at him, points at him, and then points down to the water. He just lets go. Yeah. And falls in. Goes, go take a shower. Yeah.
That water has got to be not the best to be in.
It's the same water from Sleeping Beauty's castle. It filters. It starts there. It comes down by Frontierland, by the Tiki Room into the jungle, then from the jungle into the rivers of America, then back up. So it's like a complete system.
What's your thoughts on the last thematic redo where they added like the boat and like the skipper? Like they added a lot of like thematic elements. They got rid of the natives and all that. What do you think of all that?
I actually liked it once I saw it. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but every skipper I've interviewed likes it better. The only complaint, and it's a complaint I have, is that the new scenes are way too loud. Way too loud. It's hard for a skipper to be heard over the noise, which I don't know if it's deliberate or not, because it's still super loud.
Yeah.
Every skipper I know, like at the Dancing Natives, every skipper I know had heard somebody yell something racist or inappropriate or something. They would like, you'd see people nudge them and they would laugh. And it was always, I saw it at least once or twice, so I was pretty sure that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. And so that was much more widespread than I think the average guest. Like I knew Fox News had a thing that Disney was going woke and they're getting rid of. And it's like, no, skippers, we saw stuff.
Yeah.
And it wasn't always cool, but it's weird that they got rid of humans. There's no humans anywhere in the jungle.
Oh, that's true.
That is true.
They got rid of Trader Sam, which I like better than that stupid gift shop. I'll say that. The stupid, overly loud gift shop.
Because sometimes very loud gift shop.
And sometimes at jungle, you're stuck there for 5 or 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Before you pull forward. And like when I was a new skipper, when Trader Sam, there's a signal, like if the lights are flashing, it means you have to stop. As a new skipper, that was my biggest fear. If I saw the lights flashing, I would go into a panic because now I have to improvise. And after like 6-7 months, I would pray for those lights to be flashing. I'm like, good, all right, let's get some stuff going. And now it's happened, but the skipper couldn't talk because it was so loud.
Mm-hmm.
A cacophony of noises.
Well, and we got stuck there at, it was a nighttime trip in the jungle. It's bright too. Like it was almost blinding to try and like look in that direction with the camera flashing going on. It was almost like too much.
It was really bright. I noticed that. I was there 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, but I noticed that because I hadn't seen it at night before. But overall, every skipper likes it. The only thing I don't like about it is they've tried to install a narrative into the story. Mm. It's like, oh, Skipper Felix is missing. And here's this, you know, they're from the SEA and it's this whole thing. And Jungle never had a narrative. It was always just a series of random scenes. That's why at every Disneyland, every Disney park that has a jungle, they're all in different order because the orders are relevant.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, it's like if the stretching room came in the middle of the Haunted Mansion, you'd be like, what? Why is this here?
Yeah.
The cemetery. Why is there a stretching room? But a jungle doesn't matter. So you could do these jokes in any pattern. So they're trying to force a narrative into it that I don't think always works. But I knew in 96, they were replacing the original boats that had been there since 1955. And I knew an Imagineer who said, we want to take one of the old boats and have it sunk halfway in the hippo pool. And I knew they wanted to do that back in 96.
Wow, yeah.
Do it. What is that? 24 years later, they finally got to do it. But it's cool. It's all right. It's just a little loud. If Skipper say it's a little loud and it's a little too, they just put monkeys everywhere.
Yeah, like they did.
Besides monkeys, like there's other animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like the two, what is it? Maggie and I can't remember what the names of those chimps are that are right before the backside of water. One has a magnifying glass. Oh, Annette. That's it. Oh, Maggie and Annette, because one has a magnifying glass and the other one has Annette. I do think they're cute. But I kind of wonder with the story, I wonder if maybe the story won't be as pushed with the whole Skipper Felix, you know, that whole thing. If that'll kind of fade and maybe once it's been there a little longer,
Yeah, it's like Star Tours where like they add the new scenes, so they're like heavily in the rotation, then over time they're just like, all right, we'll rejigger the mix again. It could be like that with Jungle Cruise too.
I haven't heard anybody mention Skipper Felix in years. So like originally they hit it really hard and now nobody cares. Yeah.
So it's fading. They're using new jokes.
You know,
maybe the rocks will come.
Well, what I thought was interesting was at the end, you were talking about with the flashing. Mm-hmm. I thought at first I was like, is this going to be a ride photo? Like, because that like they could,
yep,
you know, make magic bands more valuable or something. I don't know. Photo pass more valuable.
Please don't give Disney ideas.
Well, they have enough of their own ideas.
It's okay. I'll be the only weekly tier without an answer. Make sure you send your questions to Producer James or Producer Vern at trivia@doweekly.net.
Hello, welcome back to Trivia Land. I have a lot of things to teach you two this week.
No. But that's okay. Our listeners love learning new things, and
so
I guess
we
do too.
I do. Okay, maybe not you.
And I learned something new while you two were discussing that we could have a little caveat for our last question that I gave you.
Okay.
But we'll get there by going through our other questions first. So first one from listener Michael R. was, what was the shortest attraction of the opening day attractions? Y'all were in the right land, but not in the right place. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride is the shortest. That iteration of the attraction was only 98 seconds.
Wow. Okay.
Quick.
It's over a minute and a half. That's pretty good.
It was a quick ride. Moving on to our second question from listener Andy M. In the Pirates of the Caribbean Pieces of Eight gift shop, what is in the chandelier and why is it influential? If you look, you see it's a monkey chandelier and it inspired Jack the Monkey in the films.
It looks like the monkey's like holding the chandelier to the like ceiling.
Oh.
Like it's on that part. Yeah. As soon as I saw a picture of it, I'm like, duh. Ugh, of course.
Because they named the monkey Jack.
Yeah.
So
right here.
Oh, I literally have never noticed this chandelier at all.
There is so much to notice in Pieces of Eight, so it makes sense.
I'm always like squirreling at all of the merchandise.
That's true. That is true.
My problem is I got to start looking up. I feel like looking up is where a lot of stuff appears that I am not paying attention to.
There are a lot of good details up there. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, what else did we get wrong?
Number three. What's the name of the motor court that serves as the boarding station for Radiator Springs?
One thing I thought I had some hope on.
They advertise cavern tours, good rates, Lincoln Continental breakfast, and clean and quiet. It's the Comfy Caverns Motor Court.
Oh, you're so close.
Caverns. I had the word caverns.
You had the word caverns in there.
You were close.
So I guess with that, I can give you half a point.
No, I don't need a pity point for a cavern.
I don't need a pity point.
All right. No half point for
I've
you
then.
I've
just accepted that I am not going to do good at trivia. That's okay.
It's a learning opportunity, Tim.
I can remember things like canal boats of the world, but you didn't ask about that.
Nope, I didn't. Maybe in the future. My last question for you was a cast member costume. These cast members wear a large red jacket with large Bruce stripe going down the sleeve and the side. The stripe has some yellow trim, and there are a few other lines of yellow as well. It does have a left breast pocket. Otherwise, it's just plain blue slacks or shorts. I found this dating to 2012 from the Every Disney Person a Star or whatever those series was.
Oh,
back then.
Every star. Wait,
every role a starring role.
Yeah,
that's what it was. Yeah. Yep. So having looked, there is some updated wardrobe and maybe a glimpse under the jacket. But Tag, you were getting there when I said I couldn't tell you which park it's in. It's because they're not in a park. It's the tram drivers.
I don't feel bad that I didn't.
What do the tram drivers look like now?
It looks like they wear the fluorescent safety vests and kind of just plain
shirts.
Oh,
white.
So,
like the white stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because the person in the front was just wearing that jacket. Wow. You would think somebody
I can confidently
like me
say I did not know
this, but
yep. I've never noticed. The two times I have been on the tram, did not notice.
What was the second time?
You weren't there. I was there with my family. That's when it broke down. Remember? My first intro exit was the tram.
The tram. I don't know how. There you go. There's your piano.
Yeah. You know, Teresa, I know you got the edge in total trivia score, so I was trying to give Tag a chance. He got so close.
That's all right.
Just couldn't get there. So, well, tough week for these two hosts going 0-4. Ouch. Hopefully you did better at home, or like Teresa says, you learned something, right?
Exactly.
So if you want to help producer Vern and I stump these two week in, week out, or maybe give them a fair shot at a question, we got two ways for you to send trivia into us. You can either go to the website dlweekly.net/trivia or send us an email to trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
A special thank you to Sidel for editing the podcast.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.